Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives Monthly Tuning into the C-Suite podcast. In this podcast series, editors of MHE chat with healthcare professionals and executives in the C-Suite. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery and organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi everyone, I'm Brianna Contreras, an editor with Managed Healthcare Executive. In this month's episode, I had the chance to chat with Sanjula Jain, Chief Research Officer at Trilliant Health, who also happens to be a 2023 winner of MHE's annual Emerging Leaders in Healthcare feature. In our conversation, Sanjula shared the concerning rise of cancer cases among those in their 30s and 40s, despite declining mortality rates overall. In this age range, neoplasm-related deaths are notably increasing, which could possibly be linked to pandemic-induced declines in primary care and screenings. Sanjula added that rising cancer care costs and increased pharmaceutical investments highlight the need for a comprehensive approach in this space.
Hello, Sanjula. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Brianna. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure to have you. Not only as an emerging leader in healthcare 2023 edition, but have you back for an episode of our Tuning into the C-Suite podcast. So to get started, I wanted to just have you maybe explain, you know, what we're seeing today as far as cancer cases increasing, particularly in younger patients, and, you know, why this is happening.
Sure. So just to kind of help set the stage, right, as we all know, cancer is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. It's a condition that we spend a lot of time as a country investing in and talking about and thinking about and how to innovate. And so it's really no surprise to anyone that generally incidence and prevalence has, you know, been on the rise year over year. But what is really shifting is that the data is suggesting that there may have been some accelerants during the pandemic timeframe that, you know, would signal that it looks a little bit different going forward. And so the first signal, as you mentioned, but I don't think is getting enough kind of attention, is the fact that for the first time really in our history, we're seeing more deaths attributed to neoplasms in the 35 to 44 year old population, that rate has increased in recent years. And right, just to kind of, why is that important? That's historically a population that generally doesn't have a lot of cancer. They tend to be a little bit healthier. You know, a lot of our screening guidelines don't really address that age cohort. And so we've seen between 2018 and 2022 that there's been about a 5% growth in the deaths there. But what is interesting is it's not as, that is in contrast to the fact that deaths attributed to neoplasms have actually decreased in older populations. So there are 45 to 54 year olds and 55 to 64 year olds. So just contrasting that, I think, is a really important kind of concept and finding. And so to really the why, I'm not a clinician, unfortunately, and so it's not something that I've been able to kind of identify a causal link, but what we do see in the research is that it's almost like we are at an inflection point, right? That is a very different signal, and that is cause for concern in a broader discussion in the industry of, okay, so what does that mean going forward? Generally with cancer being on the rise, but the fact that we're seeing some shifts by demographics.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. But yeah, so, you know, as you mentioned, the one, I guess, positive is the decline. And you said cancer deaths. I think you said with the
neoplasm.
Neoplasm. I don't want to botch that. So I guess just from maybe your perspective, how might those in the industry or, you know, say managed care space, need to adjust their strategies maybe to address the changing demographics of cancer patients, particularly in the shift toward a younger age group?
Sure. So I think I would start by answering that by saying where the default response I usually get is when I share those findings, and it usually comes back to screenings. And once again, I'm not a clinician, so I'm just looking at this from, you know, a couple of different data signals that we're seeing in terms of, you know, utilization and spending and consumer patterns. And so if you were to look at cancer screenings, we know that care basically was avoided during the pandemic. So less people went to primary care, they didn't get their screenings. That could explain why we're seeing some of the later stage diagnoses, you know, generally across age bands, all of that fun stuff. So I'm talking about general population for a second here. One thing that's interesting to note, just as an aside, is people say, well, maybe we should lower the screening rates, right? If there is something really changing in our population, maybe we should think about adjusting guidelines, right? And starting earlier. Now, I don't necessarily know whether that, you know, is clinically the right way to be thinking about it. Once again, to your question, what are some of the whys? However, what I do think is interesting to note is that screening isn't going to be the silver bullet solution either. And the reason I say that is because when you look at the data longitudinally and you look at patterns in cancer screenings today, so for example, we look at cervical cancer screening. There was recently a change to the guideline made where, you know, basically you have to get the screening less frequently, right? So that should change the general volume or frequency of what we would see the rate of screening. We actually didn't see in the U.S. population a corresponding shift in screening rates to match that recommendation, right? So that's a case where it was kind of changed. On the other side, you know, things like prostate cancer, there were also guideline changes made there. And despite it being made a broader recommendation, we see that the rates are very high, right? So people are actually getting more screening than maybe it's recommended. So it kind of starts begging the question, if we don't necessarily see screening activity concordant with what the guidelines are, it really starts begging this question of, even if we were to lower the screenings, right, it doesn't guarantee that we're going to see Americans follow that pattern, right? And there's two sides to that. There's the patient side of that, and then there's the provider side of that. So I think, you know, one thing to consider is definitely screening guidelines. I mean, if we're seeing this trend, the only, you know, we have to start getting in front of that population in a different way. But just making a guideline change is not where the puck stops, right? And so I think that's, there has to be a lot more in terms of engagement and education that the broader health economy is going to have to be thinking about. I guess in parallel to screening, you know, another trend that we see is that generally primary care engagement as a country is low. We still see that primary care volumes are down about 8.4% from 2018 to 2022. And I think that this is really concerning, right? And it's concerning when, if you really think about it, yes, the pandemic really halted a lot of our behaviors and engagement with the healthcare system. But, you know, most of us are back in offices at least a few days a week. A lot of us are traveling. We've resumed so many other aspects of our lives, but healthcare hasn't quite followed suit. And that comes at a point where we now have more access points for primary care than we've ever had before, right? Now we have virtual care. Now we have retail. Now we have all these new entrants coming into the market. So we've made it easier and more accessible for the consumer to engage, but yet they're still not engaging, right? So primary care is the front door to a lot of this. And so I think there's this broader question about why are Americans not engaging in primary care? Is it, you know, is it the Dr. Google effect, right? Where maybe Americans feel like, I generally can figure out my own thing, I don't need to see primary care. Is it the fact that people are conflating low acuity management, like when you have a cold or flu and you go to CVS, right? And you maybe, you know, go get an antibiotic prescription and get checked out. Are people conflating that type of care as a substitution or what I will call true primary care, right? Where you're getting your annual wellness, blood work, and relevant screening. So Yeah, these are just some of the things that I'm seeing happening in tandem, and I think that they all contribute to some extent, not the primary reason necessarily. And so any solution, so to speak, is going to require a lot of thought into, okay, how do we change that consumer behavior in that age segment, right, that historically hasn't needed a lot of healthcare, generally, you know, doesn't go to healthcare unless they have an issue, right? And then we're seeing these shifts in how people want to engage and when they engage and the information tools that they're using to make their healthcare decisions. So I think it's a lot that managed care and just the broader ecosystem is really going to help us start unpacking and thinking about how do we almost create a new standard of what the engagement with your healthcare system looks like in that age demographic.
Got it. Thank you for that. You know, some of this data that we've discussed, some of it has been mentioned in a report from the American Cancer Society, you know, particularly on the declining cancer mortality rates. But also Trillium Health, you guys shared a report back in spring of 22, you know, predicting the cancer screenings. Predicting a decline in the cancer screenings, as you mentioned. So I guess if you can maybe share anything comparing the two as far as, you know, how does that report from Trillium Health align with the recent findings from American Cancer Society, and maybe what are any potential implications for cancer care, which I think you did touch on a bit already, but.
Sure. Yeah, I think not too much new to add there, but just, you know, for the audience's benefit. So the ACS report that came out really focused on looking at, you know, pre-pandemic through 2019, and they get a little bit of the 2024 projections, and they mostly talk about just how the prevalence is on the rise, right? And so, like I said, that's not necessarily kind of new information. The thing that the ACS report doesn't get into too much detail around is around that, right, the shift in the age, right? And what are some of the new things that may be contributing or court-related trends that might suggest the next decade is different than the previous decade? And that's where a lot of our research has been focused is, you know, yes, where our research is consistent with the ACS in that, you know, it's kind of this upward curve. But really what our research, you know, really the kind of urgency that I have in looking at this data is I just don't think that we're talking about it as a nation, as I'm trying to think what the best way to say this, as more than, you know, business as usual, right? Like cancer has always just generally been on the rise, and right, and it's a concerning thing. But what we're seeing in the data is, you know, yes, it's on the rise, but the characteristics of how it's manifesting, maybe is the way to think about it, are just fundamentally different. And that should warrant us, you know, A, being aware about that, B, maybe starting to unpack, you know, why that might be happening to your question, right? And that why can then inform really where do we start focusing and getting ahead of it, right? So it's a little bit of a circular logic there, but I think the ACS report is a good foundational piece, but it doesn't, you know, they do a lot of their annual updates on tracking and prevalence and incidence, all of that. But we're really focused on looking at, okay, what are other things that might be important to triangulate as we try to understand and contextualize the rise? And actually, to that point, this conversation is very well timed. We're actually going to be releasing, I call it, you know, a mini study as part of our Compass publication this Sunday. It's basically a connecting the dots orientation of there's about 15 to 20 different data stories and data trends that basically talk about how these different trends that could be related, you know, pre-pandemic, kind of post-pandemic, as it relates to understanding what the future of kind of cancer looks like. So some of them we've talked about today already, but this article will really kind of put them all side by side, right? Like, what are we seeing in the shifts in diet and lifestyle, right? Is, you know, as all these things go up, what is the link with obesity? And so, you know, once again, a lot of things we know, obesity, diabetes are on the rise. Those are risk factors for cancer. That's not new information, right? So that's one you know, one more factor that could be explaining the projected increase that ACS is also talking about, right? But are there other things, right, like we're talking about on screenings or something else that could be manifesting a little bit differently for this population? So I'll be sure to send that to you, Brianna, just so you have that as context. But I think that piece kind of takes the ACS report and helps contextualize it with other relevant data trends just for books to help connect the dots.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, please send that over because that sounds really interesting. So yeah, I guess whenever you can, that'd be great. Thank you. And earlier you mentioned seeing trends in cost of care. Are you able to share any information that you have on that?
Sure. So there, you know, one other signal that we're seeing, you know, there's generally, there's kind of two things when we think about cost of care. There is variation in cost of care for how cancer is managed and treated based off market and which provider you go to. But the thing as it relates to, you know, going forward, what I'm seeing is a little bit different now is PPI. So that's the producer price index. It's kind of a standard metric. It's publicly available. And so our team has been analyzing that data to look at for different healthcare service lines, how is PPI changing, right? And what's interesting to note there is that for oncology, we see that our PPI has one of the highest increases for cancer relative to other things like women's health or, you know, other ortho, other areas. And so, you know, being an economist, I think a lot about supply and demand, right? And so, you know, once again, there are a lot of things that go into why prices are on the rise, right? And but a big piece of that is also demand. And, you know, demand is a function of not only, you know, number of cases or visits, but, you know, potentially complexity of the disease, right? And so I think that's another signal that says, you know, as we really think about the state of oncology going forward, yes, it's kind of the steady increase to the right, which we've been seeing year over year, but also costs are going up, right? And so as we think about the future, is our healthcare system prepared to absorb both of this health burden, but also economic burden?
Awesome. Thank you. And I know we're getting close to our near end here. So I will just wrap up and ask if there's anything, you know, further as far as data that you can share, you want to share that we haven't addressed. And if you could share how pharma mergers and acquisitions factor into the understanding of these trends.
Sure. I'll probably close on that. So back to kind of triangulating all these data points, you know, right? In addition to everything that we've talked about today, it's also interesting to see what pharma is doing, right? And so when you look at pharma M&A activity longitudinally, right, we see that in the most recent years, they are investing disproportionately more in oncology than they have previously. And so, you know, I'm not intimately familiar with, you know, exactly the rationale and how pharma makes, you know, their big bets and decisions, but you know, I read that as clearly pharma is seeing signals also. And so they're trying to get ahead and prepare for having therapies ready for this, right? And so once again, it's not that pharma hasn't invested in oncology previously, right? But it's that there's this disproportionately greater investment that we're seeing now, right? Relative to the last 5 to 10 years, right? So that is one more signal that says, you know, really, if I had to boil all of this together, it's not that just cancer is on the rise, but I firmly believe that all this data taken together would suggest that the next decade, maybe even, you know, 2 decades of kind of cancer, how cancer affects the American population is going to be fundamentally different than what we've dealt with in the past, right? And I think that that is really a public health kind of, if I could raise the red flag, I think I just want people to understand that we should be thinking about this a little bit differently, right? Cancer has always been important, but it might be more important going forward because of all these things that are changing or we're still trying to understand all the reasons why. But, you know, when you start seeing more 30-year-olds presenting with cancer and dying of cancer and, you know, presumably, this is just the tip of the iceberg because not everybody is even engaging in primary care and maybe even being detected. That that should be a red flag that all of us should be thinking about, okay, what are we going to do differently as we think about the next?
Thanks for tuning into this month's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit us at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.